Dr. Debbie Silber.
Absolutely incredible. She's done research on betrayal and how healing from betrayal is different from any other kind of healing. Once someone's been betrayed, they can last for 10, 20, 30 years. And she's done two TED Talks. She's an author. Absolutely incredible and inspiring. She had faced betrayal in her family and her business, and she's turned it around. And she has an institute that helps people manage through what she calls the five steps of betrayal. Fascinating discussion. I encourage you to take a look at her. I'll put it in the show notes, the two TED Talks she had. And I really, really enjoyed this, how betrayal really affects people physically, emotionally, mentally. It's a very interesting discussion. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family and their passion and their careers and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration. What a great pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, you too.
Great, great pleasure. So tell me, I have endless questions. I just want to start right away.
Let's go for it.
Do it, yeah. So when someone is betrayed, mm-hmm. their healing process is very different from others. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Yeah, that was actually one of the three discoveries that were made. I had been through personally death of a loved one. I had been through disease, and I was like, there's something about betrayal that just feels different, because of course I had been through my own, but I didn't want to assume. So I asked all my study participants, and I said, if you've been through other traumas besides betrayal, does it feel different for you? Hands down, unanimously, they said, oh my gosh, it's so different. And it's so different because it feels so intentional. So we take it so personally. So the whole self has to be rebuilt. Rejection, abandonment, confidence, worthiness, belonging, trust, they're all shattered and have to be rebuilt. So I coined a new term, which is the complete and total rebuild of the self and your life after betrayal. And it's now called post-betrayal transformation.
That's fascinating. You have two TED Talks. The one, you're a very captivating speaker, incredibly captivating. I found myself glued and not even darting my eyes anywhere. You're very good. You have a great command on stage.
Thank
you. And you point out three of the common, symptoms you make this great analogy of a house. And the house analogy was incredible, where you said, I'll let you do it, but you want a paint job, you want, a new boiler. By the way, I knew you were from the Northeast. As soon as I heard boiler, I said, well, she's from the Northeast, because I've used that term in Dallas. I said, what do you boil stuff? What do you mean? So that's a furnace. I knew exactly what you meant. But please, yeah, talk about that analogy. It was a great, great way of understanding.
Sure. So, there's a really big difference between resilience and transformation. Resilience is what you need for your everyday. You restore, you bring something back, right? Trauma and transformation is a whole different thing. So what you're speaking about is the example I used about the house. And imagine if, you had a house and this house needed a new let's say, paint job and you painted, that would be resilient. Or if you needed a new roof and you got that new roof, that would be resilience. You're restoring, you're bringing it back. Trauma and transformation is so different. That would be, you know, with trauma, it's imagine a tornado comes by and levels the house. A new paint job's not going to fix it, and a new roof's not going to fix it. And in fact, both won't fix it. But here's the thing. You have every right to stand there at the lot where your house once stood and say, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. And you'd be right. And you can call all your friends over and say, isn't this the most horrific, terrible thing you've ever seen? And they'd all agree. And you have every right to mourn the loss of your house until your last breath. However, should you choose to rebuild your house, you don't have to. But if you choose to rebuild the house, why don't you build the same one? There's nothing there. Why not make it better, more beautiful? That's the opportunity. And betrayal is the setup for transformation. Everything's been leveled and you have this beautiful opportunity to create something entirely new. But I'll tell you, most people that we come across, and certainly within the PBT Institute, they're conditioned to believe, well, let me just keep patching it up. I'll just patch it up, because there's such fear of the death and destruction of the old. But unless there's the death and destruction of the old, you cannot rebirth the new.
Define betrayal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my definition of it is it's the breaking of a spoken or unspoken rule. And every relationship has them. Think about it. We had sort of a rule. I was going to show up. We were going to have a conversation. If I didn't, I would have betrayed you. Now, wouldn't have devastated you, but, you know, inconvenienced you for sure. And the way it works is the more we trust and the more we depend on someone, the deeper the betrayal. So a child, for example, who's completely dependent on their parent, and then the parent does something awful, that's going to have a very different impact than, let's say, your best friend sharing your secret or your coworker taking credit for your idea.
You have this great quiz, which you encourage people to take. So I took it, and I don't feel that I've been seriously, let's say that, at a high level been betrayed. But as I go through the quiz, I find out that, well, no, I've had family members lie to me. Mm-hmm. I've had some of these things happen. And you're right, I did kind of brush them off. And I just, so we've all experienced it. Mm-hmm. And how we handle it is just completely up to us.
Oh, absolutely. And what you're referring to, that was part of the second discovery. And that was that there's actually this collection of symptoms, physical, mental, and emotional, so common to betrayal. It's now known as post-betrayal syndrome. And the quiz you're referring to, the post-betrayal syndrome quiz, that's on our site. We've had easily over 30,000 people take the quiz to see to what extent they're struggling. What's interesting is, and I've pulled some stats for you if you want me to share them,
please.
But we've all heard time heals all wounds. And I have the proof. When it comes to betrayal, it's simply not true. There's a question on the quiz that says, is there anything else you'd like to share? And besides people sharing, you know, their stories, their physical, mental, and emotional symptoms, they're saying things like, my betrayal happened 40 years ago, and I can still feel the hate. My betrayal happened 35 years ago. I'm unwilling to trust again. My betrayal happened 10 years ago. Feels like it happened yesterday. So we know when it comes to betrayal, time may soften it a bit, but it is not healed and it shows up. I can spot an unhealed betrayal a mile away.
Explain that.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Yeah. And I'd love to share the stats too. So, you know, we see it in health. We see it in work. We see it in relationships. So for example, in relationships, I'll see it in one of two ways. A repeat betrayal. If there's a repeat betrayal, that's an unhealed betrayal. We keep getting opportunities in the form of people to teach us something that we really need to learn. Maybe the lesson is you are lovable, worthy, deserving. Maybe the lesson is you do need better boundaries in place, whatever it is for you. Until and unless you get that, you will keep getting opportunities to learn that lesson. Until you get the mother of all betrayals and you're like, I got it. Okay. Doesn't need to be repeated. So if it's a repeat betrayal, it's an unhealed betrayal. The second way is when you see someone with the big wall up, they're like, nope, been there, done that. No one's getting close to me again. And they think it's coming from a place of strength and it's not. It's coming from fear. You know, so that's how we'll see it in relationships. In health, I see people going to the most well-meaning coaches, doctors, healers, therapists to manage a stress-related symptom, illness, condition, disease. And at the root of it is an unhealed betrayal. Or we see it at work where people, they want to ask for that raise or promotion. They deserve it, but their confidence was shattered. So they don't have the confidence to ask. They're bitter and resentful instead. Or they want to be a collaborative partner. They want to be a good team player. But the person they trusted the most proved untrustworthy. How can they trust that boss, that coworker, that JV partner? So it shows up everywhere.
My goodness. Is someone dying of betrayal?
Are they dying of betrayal? They can die from the symptoms betrayal creates. Absolutely. I mean, this was, if I tell you how often we see this within the PBT Institute, we see people coming in with broken heart syndrome, and it's real. I had a panic attack. I never had panic attacks. You know, this was common, but it affects us physically, mentally, and emotionally. This is one of the most challenging things to face. Think about it. This was the person, or these were the people, that gave us a sense of safety and security. So when this is the person, these are the very people to shatter that sense of safety and security, it's traumatizing. How do you feel safe? You see? So just to share some stats from the quiz,
please.
78%, this is out of 30,000. Around, constantly revisit their experience. 81% feel a loss of personal power. 80% are hypervigilant. 94% deal with painful triggers, and those triggers can take you down. These are the most common physical symptoms. 71% have low energy. 68% have sleep issues. 63% have extreme fatigue. They can sleep a whole night, wake up, they're exhausted. Those are your adrenals that have crashed. 47% have weight changes. So in the beginning, maybe you can't hold food down. Later on, maybe you're using food for comfort. 45% have digestive issues, anything from Crohn's, IBS, diverticulitis, constipation, diarrhea, you name it. The most common mental symptoms. 78% are overwhelmed. 70% walking around in a state of disbelief. 68% are unable to focus. 64% in shock. 62% are unable to concentrate. So imagine you can't concentrate. You have a gut issue. You're exhausted. And you're supposed to work. You're supposed to raise your kids. That's not even the emotional ones. Emotionally, 88% experience extreme sadness. 83% anger. 82% feel hurt, 80% have anxiety, 79% are stressed. This is why I wrote the book Trust Again. 84% have an inability to trust. 67% prevent themselves from forming deep relationships because they're afraid of being hurt again. 82% find it hard to move forward. 90% want to move forward, but they don't know how.
Wow. Incredible. And how, so when somebody's being treated for, like, let's say PTSD, mm-hmm. you know, actual from military or from football, mm-hmm. we see, or mm-hmm. That's more of a physical thing, but is there still a sense of betrayal there?
Well, PTSD is very common to betrayal. You know, we think that it's sort of reserved for those war vets that, let's say, a car backfires and they're reminded of their time in combat, right? And their bodies are, of course, they're here, but their bodies are responding as if it's happening again. We find the same thing so often as it relates to betrayal. There's a trigger, right? Or a reminder, and someone's right back there at D-Day, Discovery Day, and it's exceptionally painful. But the good news is, and the study proved it, I'm living proof, so are our certified coaches and members and within the PBT Institute, you can heal from all of it, all of it.
Let's talk about that. How does healing occur?
Yeah. So this was actually the third discovery, and it was, while we can stay stuck for years, decades, a lifetime, and so many of us do, if we're going to fully heal from the symptoms of post-betrayal syndrome all the way to that state of post-betrayal transformation, we're going to go through 5 now proven predictable stages. And what's even more exciting about that is we even know now what happens physically, mentally, and emotionally, and we know what it takes to move from one stage to the next. So, wow. Yeah, so now healing is predictable. And I'm happy to share the 5 stages if that would
Please.
Sure. So they're all mapped out in trust again. It's what we teach within the Institute. I'm going to give you a distilled version right here. So
thank you.
The stage one, this is like a setup stage. And if you can imagine four legs of a table, the four legs being physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. What I saw with everybody was a real heavy lean on the physical and the mental and kind of neglecting the emotional and the spiritual. So what does that look like? Looks like we're really good at thinking and doing. And not really prioritizing the feeling and being. But that's where our intuition lies. And we turn that down. But if imagine a table with only two legs, it's easy for that table to topple over, and that's us. Stage two, by far the scariest of all of the stages. And this is shock, trauma, D-Day, Discovery Day. This is like where the person takes a mask off and says, no, this is who I've been this whole time. And this is the breakdown of the body, the mind, and the worldview. So breakdown of the body. Here you've ignited the stress response. You're headed for every single stress-related symptom, illness, condition, disease. Your mind is in a complete state of chaos and overwhelm. You cannot wrap your mind around what you just learned. This makes no sense. And there's a breakdown of the worldview. That's your mental model, the rules that prevent chaos, that govern you. And in a moment, every rule you've ever had is no longer. The bottom's bottomed out. And a new bottom hasn't been formed yet. So it's terrifying. But think about it. If the bottom were to bottom out on you, what would you do? You'd grab hold of anything you could to stay safe and stay alive. That's stage three. Survival instincts emerge. It's the most practical of all of the stages. If you can't help me, get out of my way. How do I survive my experience? Who can I trust? Where do I go? How do I feed my kids? But here's the trap. This is stage three is the most common place to get stuck. Because once you've figured out how to survive, because it feels so much better than the shock and trauma of where you just came from, you're like, whew, okay, all right, we can do this. This is good. And you have no idea there's a stage four and stage five. Transformation doesn't even begin until stage four. So you're in stage three thinking this is as far as you're going to go. So four things happen. The first is you start getting these small self benefits. You get your story. You get to be right. You get someone to blame. You get a target for your anger. You don't have to do the hard work of learning to trust again. Can I trust you? Should I trust you? Ah, forget it. I'm not trusting anybody. You get sympathy from everybody you tell your story to. So you start planting roots in this space. You're not supposed to be here alone, but you don't know that. And because you're here longer than you should, now your mind starts doing things like, well, maybe you deserved it. Maybe you're not as good as you think. Maybe you're not all that. So you plant deeper roots. Now, because again, you're here longer than you should be, and these are the thoughts you're thinking, like energy attracts like energy. So now you're calling situations and circumstances and relationships towards you to confirm, yep, this is exactly where you belong. It gets worse. I'll get you out of here though. Because it's so bad, but you have no idea there's anything better, you start resigning yourself to thinking, this is as good as it gets. I better find a way to be okay with this. So here's where you start using food, drugs, alcohol, work, TV, keeping busy, reckless behavior to numb, avoid, distract yourself from what's so painful to feel or face. So think about it. You do that for a day, a week, a month. Now it's a habit. A year, 10 years, 20 years. And I can see someone 20 years out and say, that emotional eating you're doing, that drinking you're doing, that numbing in front of the TV, do you think that has anything to do with your betrayal? And I swear they'd look at me like I'm crazy. They'd say, that happened 20 years ago. Do you see? All they did was put themselves in stage three and stay there. Does that make sense?
Wow.
Yeah. And that's why it's the most common place to get stuck. And my next book is hitting that stage three hard. Anyway, if you are willing to let go of the small self benefits, grieve, mourn the loss, bunch of things you need to do, you move to stage four. Stage four is finding and adjusting to a new normal. Here's where you acknowledge, I can't undo my experience, but I can control what I do with it. And I always use that example of if you've ever moved to a new house, office, condo, apartment, whatever, your stuff's not all there. It's not quite cozy yet, but it's going to be okay. And when you're in this mental state, what happens is you start turning down the stress response. You're not healing just yet, but at least you stop the massive damage you were causing in stage two and stage three. What's interesting about stage four also is if you were to move, you don't take everything with you. You don't take the things that don't represent who you want to be once you're in this new space. And what I found was if your friends weren't there for you, you don't take them with you. You've just outgrown them right here. Very common. Anyway, when you're in this space, you're making it cozy mentally, you're making it home, you can move into the fifth most beautiful stage. And this is healing, rebirth, and a new worldview. The body starts to heal. Self-love, self-care, eating well, exercise. You didn't have the bandwidth for that earlier. Now you do. Your mind starts to heal. You're making new rules. You're making new boundaries based on your experience. And you have a new worldview based on the road you just traveled and based on what you see so clearly now. And the four legs of the table, in the beginning, it was physical and mental. By this point, we're solidly grounded because we're focused on the emotional and the spiritual too. Those are the five stages.
Fantastic. Talk a little bit about the spiritual aspect, one of the four tables. And we see that in kind of 12-step programs where some people don't want to get past that because, well, it's a kind of belief in God. But talk to me about the definition of spiritual.
Yeah. You know, there was a huge spiritual component with healing, and it is part of healing. And what I found was it happened in a few ways and for a few reasons. One thing I noticed was some people weren't spiritual at all and they became spiritual. Some people abandoned their religion. They felt their religion wasn't there for them, or they adopted the spiritual side of their religion. And it was really for two reasons. It was because when you've been betrayed, you so desperately need a sense of connectedness. You just feel like every rule you've ever had, everything you've ever believed in, everything that sort of governed how life works for you is completely and totally shattered. So we need something to hang on to. The other thing is betrayal shatters trust in everything and everyone. You certainly don't trust your betrayer. You don't trust yourself because you're like, I'm a bright person. How did I not see? How did I not know? So then you say, if I can't trust that person I put 100% trust in, if I can't trust myself, how the heck can I trust anybody else? So we sort of reason, well, at least I can trust in something bigger, something other than me. So it was a huge, huge component in healing.
Fascinating. And typically, how long do those five step stages take?
Yeah, it's so different for everybody. And one of the big, and you know, here I was doing the research. You're not supposed to assume anything, but I was new at this. And I felt like, wow, you know what? It's probably going to be that the people who were the hardest hit would grow the least and take the longest because they had the most to overcome. That had nothing to do with it. There were three groups in the study who did not heal. One was the group they refused to accept their betrayal. So that's like the group that's standing there over the lot where their house once stood, mourning the loss of their house, right? Same idea. They didn't heal. The second group was the group that were numbing, avoiding, distracting. Like they ran to the doctor who put them on a mood stabilizer or anti-anxiety medication, or they started emotionally eating or drinking. They didn't heal. May have made the day a bit easier to get through. They didn't heal. The third group, this was the group where the betrayer had no consequences, very little consequences. So here's where someone didn't want to break up a family. They were afraid. Financial fears, religious reasons, that was a big one, or just fear of the unknown. And all they did was just try to put it behind them. I only saw two things with this group. Number one, a further deterioration of the relationship. And number two, this group was the most physically sick. Your broken heart can't handle that. So when it comes to healing, what I would say is the biggest needle mover is willingness. Because, you know, of course, with all the tools, the support, I mean, that's exactly what the PBT Institute is for, the tools, the support, the research, everything. But if someone comes in and they don't want to give up their story, or, you know, or they don't want to give up the numbing techniques they've been using, they're just keeping their healing at bay. So willingness is the biggest factor we've seen in healing.
They want to be healed. And if they don't, they're not going to.
That's it. They just have to want it. We got the rest.
Now, Debbie, what if you're the betrayee? The betrayer.
Yeah. You know, what I found is betrayal will show you who someone truly is or who they temporarily became. And so after a betrayal, it has the potential to be the greatest wake-up call to the betrayer, where they look at things clearly and say, what the heck am I doing? I just destroyed the heart and the life of the person I love the most. So it's a beautiful opportunity. And I know this because this is what happened to me. And from there, there's such deep shame. But how do you heal shame? You bring light and you bring honor to it, right? And that person can have so much remorse and be filled with so much regret and apology and restitution and, you know, and all of these things. So they have a beautiful opportunity to make it right. That doesn't mean the person who's been betrayed is interested, but it's such a great opportunity for that betrayer. And if at the very least, pay it forward, you teach that to someone, what you've learned, so they don't go down that same dark path.
Wow. I know a couple where, you know, one, the woman had an affair, you know, obviously betrayed the husband, and she let him know, and then, you know, they were obviously very upset, but she was so upset by what she had done to him, mm-hmm. that he almost saw how damaging it was. This was over months, mm-hmm. but how damaging it was for her to do this, and it was almost healing for him.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to think that someone just betrays and then they're just skipping along enjoying their day. I mean, it's you know, that remorse sort of lets the other person know, you know, that they're at least seeing it clearly. And I had two horrible betrayals. You know, you don't study something like betrayal unless you have to, right? So yeah, it's my 30th year in business. And as business would morph and change, as life would morph and change, so would business. And the first was my family, and it was devastating. And then a few years later, it happened again. And this time it was my husband. And so I got him out of the house and entered into this PhD program. And of course, everything changed based on these discoveries. But rebuilding is always a choice, whether you rebuild yourself and move on. And that's what I did with my family. It wasn't an option to rebuild with them. Or if the situation lends itself, if you're willing, if you want to, you rebuild something entirely new, a brand new house, right, with the person who hurt you. And that's what I did with my husband. So not long ago, we married each other again. New rings, wow. New vows, new dress, and our four kids is our bridal party. Never in a billion years would I have ever considered anything like that if I wasn't totally different, and for sure if he wasn't completely and totally transformed. But it's only with that complete and total crash can two people have the opportunity to rebuild something entirely different. A new them personally, and then a new collective them.
Congratulations. What a great story. You know, I started my business back in the 90s, and then before I knew it, you know, my daughter was born, and I had gained, you know, I was up to 340 pounds, just kind of neglecting everything. And then, you know, the doctor said you're diabetic, mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to see your daughter grow up. So, you know, I kind of come to Jesus moment, mm-hmm. did a lot of changes, lost a lot of weight, and just kind of turned myself around. But that kind of transformation, I don't. It's really not applicable here. It's more of a. It wasn't really. Did I betray myself?
Well, you know, it actually is applicable, because when you're faced with, you know, we have, and I talk about it in one of my other books, The Unshakable Woman, how there's the life crisis, death of a loved one, disease, devastation of some kind, sure. abuse, betrayal, financial crisis, whatever, house fire, whatever it is for you, or what I call the self-induced life crisis. And here's where, like, one is done, you know, they say to us, but for us, right? And the other, we bring on ourselves. And either way, it's an incredibly powerful force to create change. That's the day you throw out the cookies, you make the doctor's appointment, you pack your bags, you have that challenging conversation. You're different. Something shifted. You were tired of your own excuses. You were tired of your own story. You saw clearly the path you were headed. And it wasn't working for you anymore. So you made a decision. You know, the people think change takes time. I disagree. I think seeing the effect of the decision may take a while, but decision happens on a moment. Change takes a moment. And in that moment, your daughter was more important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating. And before reaching out to you, before talking to you, before, you know, researching you, I never knew that betrayal was such the source of all these issues. It's fascinating to me. You made a great statement in one of your TED Talks too, is trauma is the setup for transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Well, think about it. You know, everything has been leveled, and it betrayal lends itself to creating an entirely new identity where you take the parts you love and you leave behind everything that no longer serves. This version of me is very different than the version of me before betrayal. Like, for example, and you're able to change whatever you want. It allows itself to where you look at it and you say, well, who do I want to be now? Because everything's been destroyed. And one of the things that I did, I looked at it and I was like, you know, I've always been so hard on myself. I'm such a driver by nature anyway. And I work so hard and it's just who I am. And I don't mind that. But the part I minded was I was so critical of myself and so hard on myself. And I was like, I just don't want to be that anymore. So I decided that, like, for example, I get lost wherever I go. It's just what happens. If I get in the car, chances are I'm going to get lost. And I used to, you know, call myself names and all this stuff. And then I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. So now when I do those types of things, I'm simply adorable. And my entire family has to go along with it too. So I've been exceptionally adorable with many, many things. But that's the thing. We can recreate whatever we want. We're rewriting the entire script. That's how it's the setup for transformation.
It seems to me you're defining betrayal as a spectrum as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the, some people feel that sort of death by a thousand cuts. Some people have that one gigantic earth-shattering, soul-crushing betrayal. Mm. And whatever it is, and it's not to say which one's better, which one's worse, they all stink, but they all give you opportunities to transform. And when you do, it's trauma well served.
It's trauma well served. Yeah, it certainly is. Now, your other TED Talk is on, it's more on sabotaging yourself, mm-hmm. which really has a lot to do with betrayal.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was fascinating to me. And you gave three examples and you gave them fake names and what they did. Mm-hmm. And I know those three people very well. You know, I in my work and my friends and my friends' spouses and, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You've done a really great job of discussing that. Please elaborate.
Yeah, sure. And first I'll give you a little insider tip on that first TEDx. That was 6 weeks after my betrayal.
Wow.
My entire life crashed down. And this was 6 weeks later. I don't even know how I pulled that off. I think it got,
it didn't look like it. Command of that stage.
Thank you. A good amount of views. And I think there was a rawness about it. I was in tremendous pain, but I knew there was a message. And so I don't specifically speak about my betrayal. I wasn't ready to do that yet, but it's there. It's there. And you hear it through the words, you can kind of get a sense. But anyway, that, it was, we sabotage ourselves because who will we be? What will happen if we actually listen to that tap on the shoulder? It's going to shake everything up and we don't want to do that. You know, but, and I say it in that TEDx, when the pain of where we are becomes greater than the fear of the unknown, that's when we jump.
Please repeat that. That's very important.
When the pain of where we are becomes greater than the fear of the unknown, that's when we jump. We will numb ourselves continuously trying to keep something at bay. But when it gets to the point, like in your example, right? You were numbing with food.
Yeah.
Right? When the pain of that was, it was certainly there. But when the pain of not seeing your daughter and the potential future you had with her became greater than just your habit, what you were doing, you jumped. You did it yourself. That's it's a perfect example of it.
Come to Jesus moment.
That's it.
Yeah.
You don't know how it'll look. You don't know what'll happen, but it's got to be better than what you're doing.
So what do you recommend for people? I mean, we need to get the word out here. I mean, people that, you know, that Talk about your institute, please.
Thank you. So yeah, so the PBT Institute, the Post Betrayal Transformation Institute, there's nothing like it that exists. And what we have in there is, imagine a space, totally online. We have people from all over the world who participate, where we have daily classes with our certified coaches. Every coach is certified in moving you through the five stages, but they're bringing in their 10, 20, 30 plus years of expertise, anything having to do with helping someone heal. So we have coaches who specialize in addiction, in narcissism, in reconciliation, in divorce, in self-betrayal. And so members go to all these classes with these coaches, and they can work with them privately. We have our signature programs that on your own 24/7, you can watch them, and they will literally walk you through the stages. I'm in there teaching Q&A every week. Everything's recorded too, if you can't catch it live, so you can binge watch. I mean, just the most amazing things. We bring in experts to teach masterclasses, and we have the most incredible community because it's very active, but we don't allow, it's not the like, ain't it awful club? You know, like, this is what happened to me. Oh, you think that's bad. No, we don't do any of that. It's all to lift and inspire. And what I love, my favorite thing is, you know, I'll have these open Q&A small group chats, and there'll be one person asking a question and speaking, and the other members are saying, you didn't sound like that like 2 weeks ago. So it's having all of those components. Remember, it's everything the research proved we need, and what the 30,000 people who've taken the quiz say they want, and what's excluded is what doesn't work. So everything in there is what's proven to work. And it does. We have a really good charity program too, which people love.
There must be great examples too of people that have healed that want to try healing others as well. I mean, with this community, it must be very rewarding.
Oh, it is. We have, you know, I would say it's probably 50-50. People come in just because they hear about our certification program and they want to have deeper transformations with their own clients. But a lot of times it's members. They've healed so much and they just can't wait to pay it forward. And so two reasons they're so excited about it. And I'm so excited about it. Number one, when you heal like that, you can't help but want to share it. And the second thing is it keeps you on your game. You can't afford to slip too far when you're representing the work. You know, I'm teaching this stuff all day long. A trigger can take me down, but it's just not going to because of the work I'm doing, so that I don't have to worry about that whole imposter syndrome. If I do the work, I can just be me and it's working.
Oh, that's fascinating. You mentioned before about there's some people that kind of can't be saved because they don't want to, and some other examples. Are there, so the opposite side, have you found it the most, I don't want to say easiest, but the least difficult to heal people when in certain circumstances?
You know, we have people who come in with therapy trauma, because if that therapist isn't highly skilled in betrayal, it does way more harm than good. So we see that a lot. And then I see people, I'll tell you that the only people who leave are the people who are at that place of post-betrayal transformation, and then they're supposed to go. That's what we're the training wheels until you don't need them. But it's also the other type of person who leaves is the one who's unwilling to do the work. They would rather have their story. And think of it like, I could have done that. I had a really powerful story. The most important people in my life all betrayed me. And everybody would have given me sympathy. But the story of helping thousands of people through, you know, my journey and through these discoveries, I just feel like that's such a better story. And I didn't do anything that anybody else couldn't do. You have an opportunity to take, you know, to take your experience. And I feel like you owe it to yourself to do something good with something bad.
Yes. Do something good with something bad. Absolutely. And how is it often where like drugs have to be prescribed or anything for some of these patients where they need sedation?
You know, it's a hard thing because we find that the ones who are opting for the drugs aren't feeling things as they need to in order to move through them. But it's not my position to say, you know, this is just what the research proved and what I see. Anything you're doing to numb yourself is taking away from your healing. You are slaying dragons. You are facing demons. You're walking right through it. But because you do, you are a version of yourself that would blow your mind. You know, I use this example a lot. And it's like, imagine if you have a messy room, like take a messy garage, and you think it's not vying for your attention. Oh, but it is. You don't like going in there. And if you have to go in, you go in, you grab what you need to, you get out as quickly as you can, right? But then there's that one day where you're like, that's it, I'm going in. And think about it. You grab your garbage bags, you roll up your sleeves, and you're in. Now think about what happens. It actually looks worse in the beginning because stuff is all over the place. And you're like, I'm going to donate this, I'm going to throw out this, I'm going to fix that, right? And things are a big mess. And so you do. You donate, you toss, you put the car, you know, in the car, the stuff you're going to get fixed, and then you put back what's left. Now think about how you feel. You are so proud. You want to invite people over and look at your garage, right? And you're like, look at me. You feel this sense of pride and accomplishment only because you dove in there and you did it. And that's what happens when you do the work. When you're numbing on any level, it's as if you just keep walking by the garage, acting like it's not bothering you.
And we see that so often with kind of the side effects. And
I'm going to give you a saying. I've had clients say this for 30 years. Ready? It applies to every single area of life. When you're doing, that just reminded me. So that's why I'm going to share it.
Yes.
Easy now, hard later. Hard now, easy later. Take your pick. It's going to be one of those two. The numbing is easy now. Easy now. I don't want to deal with it. Hard later. It's still there. Hard now. This is the worst stuff to face. Easy later. Wow. Look at me. You see? Apply it to weight loss. Easy now. They're the cookies. I want them. Hard later. I can't button my pants. You know? Right. Hard now. They're the cookies. I want them. I'm going to have an apple instead. Easy later. Ooh, look at me. You see?
Very, very interesting. That's quite profound. And you know, my daughter was here this weekend and, you know, I got a couple of donuts and things like that. And I said, well, I'm going to be fasting a little bit longer and it's, you know, I'm going to pay easy now and hard later. Yeah, that's very interesting. Has hypnotherapy ever helped at all? Hypnotism?
You know, we've had people who have tried hypnotherapy. What we found is it can't just be one approach. There's a particular recipe for everybody, but it needs to be physical, mental, emotional, psychological, spiritual. And like some people just choose therapy. And that's getting to it from one level. But betrayal tattoos itself on your body, mind, and heart. You need to heal it in every place it's affected.
My goodness. And the way you've turned, I guess what you said right there from trauma is the setup. I mean, you've turned your betrayal into healing yourself, but healing 30,000 people have taken a quiz and countless of others. I mean, that's so commendable. So commendable. This must be so rewarding. That's I can't say good enough things.
Oh, thank you. It's, there's something really healing about knowing that that my trauma served the greater good.
That's right. That's exactly right. What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. So you're an author. How can we get in touch with you? How can we get more information about your institute?
Oh, great. So I would recommend everybody take the quiz, and they could just find the post-betrayal syndrome quiz to see to what extent you're struggling. And you could just find that at the PBT Institute, as in post-betrayal transformation, thepbtinstitute.com/quiz. And for those who want the book Trust Again, it's available on Amazon, but get it from this link because then you get a bunch of goodies too. And you can find that at thepbtinstitute.com/trust again.
Very good. And I'll put that in the show notes at the bottom. What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. And please, please keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pin's Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. There's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pins Disciplined Conversations.